You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, alongside Neil Williams. Neil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay. Well, we have an exciting show for everybody today. It'll be just Neil and myself. I believe we have a guest next week who will be wonderful and marvelous. It'll be Neil and I today talking about some of the core components of sober living houses or sober living environments. And particularly in 2021, I think the sober living house or the sober living environment might be the new treatment center, the way things are going with healthcare and benefits and stuff like that. I hate to say it, but that seems to be a trend. So what Neil and I are going to do today, folks, is we're going to go through some of the pros and cons of a sober living home or a sober living environment. And let me tell you that between Neil and myself, that's first, second, and third hand experience for real with various types of places. And so I can't wait to see how this unfolds. So so Neil, I know you're, you know, I'll talk about my perspective, you know, obviously here. Okay. Forward real quick, Federal Bureau of Prisons, we released I guess I was over thousands, if you will, releasing inmates in particularly a 5-state region here in Texas, you know, Fifth Circuit area and those types of things. And we'd have halfway houses and treatment services we would procure. And so that, in effect, is like a sober living house.
Hold on real quick. When you had a guy, so you're dealing with someone, an individual, do you have this list of all these places basically in your database to go through and look at?
Well, no, there's federal contracts.
Okay.
Who held the federal contract for those drug cases in whatever town?
Okay. Right?
So the place in Houston is downtown, and Dismas Charities has Lubbock, or somebody else has, you know, Little Rock, and you know, Cross Point had San Antonio, and you know, just Salvation Army had Waco, and I could kind of rattle off different vendors that had different types of living environments for releasing federal drug cases. And then we would have the treatment alongside of that, the aftercare and outpatient services alongside of that. And that's just one level. Now I've had the pleasure for whatever reason to experience other types of sober living environments in various states. So it's awesome. It is what it is. And I think these sober living environments and sober living homes are like a box of chocolates, right? You don't know what you're going to get until you get the box open and you get there. And as a matter of fact, you and I and some folks are going to go on a tour of one here in Tarrant County that I know about and know good things about. So we'll get to see that firsthand and maybe do a show on that at a later time or what have you. So anyway, so what kind of introductory remarks do you have, Neil, on the sober living?
First, the first thing I want to say about a sober living environment is I think it is one of the most useful tools when it comes to starting out recovery. I think if you can arrange transitioning out of treatment into a sober living facility or out of incarceration into a sober living facility, if in fact your deal was drugs and alcohol, that if that was what got you incarcerated to begin with, not everyone who's incarcerated needs drug and alcohol treatment. That's just a fact. But if that is you, which in my case it certainly was, I think it can be very beneficial, because if nothing else, the one thing you'll always know with sober living is it's basically getting you more sobriety. So if nothing else, it's a way to not 100% guarantee, but it's more secure than just throwing yourself out in the world and saying it's me against the world. You kind of, it's a net, you know, it's your cushion to the fall. So I think there are a lot of good things about it.
Exactly. It's like the equivalent of halfway house for prison. You kind of go into a sober living environment after you've gone through your core treatment. And that gives you the chance for more sobriety, more clean time. And with that, and the reason that that is an opportunity, because it's another environment that has a daily routine and it has structure to it. And that structure and that structure really is important. And I know in the project we're working with, we're going to have that structure. We're going to have for those individuals that don't have a job yet or will not get a job, which is entirely possible in our case, they will be engaged in programming throughout the day and some evenings with 12-step, traditional 12-step meetings, as well as smart recovery meetings and programming, as well as individualized coaching. And we'll have some didactic classes. So, but that's not always the case in these sober living environments, but we'll talk about that when we get to the cons. But
you mean they don't always have structure?
Correct. Or programming for that matter, depending on the place. So you'd like to think there was structure. I went to an Oxford house once in North Carolina. And then I found out that the guy who was the houseman or whatever, he was actually using meth. It came out months later.
You get a house manager, but and it's like your level system, you know, you promote up.
But what was it like? Yeah, just come home by 10 o'clock and go to one meeting a week and we're good. Give me your money, you know, and that was it. I think that was a wrap. So
I have had at least a few sponsees who lived in Oxford houses. You want to say they're all the same, but they never are.
No, they're not. There's some good ones. So real quick.
Yeah, there's a general format that they run, you know, that they're all supposed to adhere to. But, just like you said, you end up with a house manager who's smoking dope.
Yeah.
Things are going to change.
They want to come on. I literally had to go to the place and extract the individual from the basement. And it was one of those Liam Neeson type of Taken moments where I had to literally nearly break down the door and get the individual out of there. Anyway, but
at least it was exciting.
Yeah. Back to our, at least it wasn't something else. Okay. So, right. We have daily routine. We have daily structure, a chance for recovery. And also in a sober living house, we're hoping that people are reintegrating back into their families or reintegrating back into society, or they're trying to get the skills and opportunities to live a more independent lifestyle, right?
Right.
And so the sober living house can help in that transition from being in an institution or institutionalized to more independent living. And so that is a very core, I think it's a core responsibility. I know some places it's just a stopgap and a stepping stone measuring, hey, you know, if you want to spend your time wisely and work on yourself, great. If you just want to sit here and lay in the house and eat sandwiches and watch TV, okay. You know, so.
And I think right there that you're saying a responsibility, I agree with you. And that's what will separate the places who are getting a piece of the pie and the places that are helping people. I think that right there, you have a responsibility to help these individuals transition. You should want to provide resources and direction. You should want to do that.
I think absolutely. You should want to do that, but like any organization, just depends on who's running it. And then, you know, are folks complacent versus vigilant? Are folks engaged versus disengaged? And so I guess that could lead us to our next part. We did talk about transition back in back to society. But you know what? I mean, maybe you can explain this, Neil, a lot better than I can. Like, your recovery outside of an institution is way different than what you thought your recovery was going to be like inside of an institution. Right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you can sit here and tell me what life's going to be like all you want, but until it's happening and I don't have that instructor who's holding me accountable to be in class with my packet open all these times throughout the day, until I'm by myself in society and having to make those decisions, hold myself accountable, incorporate self-discipline, and be excited about it, it's a challenge. Because what happens to everybody, well, almost everybody, when you get out, the real world is there. The bills, the shelter, the food, the transportation. If you have legal issues, the legal issues. If you have kids, the child support. If you, you know, there's real stuff. So people can get overwhelmed that if you don't have somebody to at least assist you in getting in touch with people, I think you can get lost. Because like you said, recovery is all of a sudden very different than what you thought it was going to be. And it's not just about being at a 9 a.m. AA meeting after four cups of coffee and being just amped up and excited to tell everybody about your fourth step or your fifth step. Dude, those are good moments, and it's fun to enjoy recovery, but it's work. It's work if you want to keep it.
It is. So yeah, it's your recovery changes with your station in life, I think. And so it is interesting. You have to be a little nimble, but you also have to have that structure and routine. And the sober living environment is the perfect place to develop those new habits that you're going to have moving forward once you gain that independence in terms of setting up your own schedule. You set up your sponsor, your meetings, your job, your rent, your bills, your deposits, your, you know, whatever. But you don't do it alone. Like, we'll help, or we would, in theory, help as coaches and whatnot. We would help with our clients make that transition and make those steps, because it is hard. It's hard to go from 0 to 100 real quick like that and move forward. So, all right. There's a lot of resources that folks can tap into in a sober living environment, right? Education, possibly. What other types of resources do you think folks would benefit
from? A lot of these sober living environments have been working since most of them are pretty well established. And if it's even if it is new, the people who established this facility have probably been around the environment and they know what it's about. Meaning they're going to have relationships with employers who are looking to help people out, willing to hire people with a criminal record, willing to hire people for part-time jobs, and understand that there's going to be training involved. They have connections to certain types of assistance programs that people may need, childcare, stuff like that. Or if a lot of people get into situations, a lot of people who also struggle with substance abuse and things like that, end up in situations where you either need to take parenting classes, anger management classes, or some type of, I needed to take, it was like called DOEP. It was a drug class to get my license back. Oh. I had to figure out how I was going to handle all these. What are they called? The fees.
Right. Court costs.
Surcharge fees. Yeah. Surcharges. So all sorts of stuff like that. So you've got employer assistance, you've got child care and class assistance, all sorts of stuff that you just don't know about, because clearly you're coming out of a time in your life that's been pretty chaotic, and it requires 100% of your focus just not to be using anymore, you know? So that's very helpful.
Right. Yeah, because right there with that Maslow hierarchy of needs, you know, like food and shelter, but you, sobriety, right, and abstinence, you need that right there with it. And right. So hanging on to that and keeping that is absolutely crucial to survival, much less somebody's development or thriving moving forward. And so, right. Again, you know, the sober living environment can be a very important, piece in that transition. Man, we just kind of think about, and of course I've been in the space for over 30 years, but I would just think, yeah, people would go to a place and just kind of come out and go back to their families because, they had family day somewhere in there or whatever. Yeah. They took a parenting module somewhere in their treatment. So they're good. And man, that's kind of what we did the day. And it was, the sober living homes weren't as known about or talked about, like they are today. So just people got thrown out,
And you have all the different, I guess you call them categories, all the different styles of sober living, because you've got your state or your federal. I've heard some pretty crazy stories about places where guys transition out of Safe P into those halfway houses. I've heard some wild stories. And me personally, I was in a, it was an independent, they worked with parole, the Parole Board of Texas, but they weren't state funded. And it was privately owned. But I was in a house where they specifically placed individuals with a background similar to mine who had been incarcerated for more than this amount of time. They kind of group you like, oh, you fit into this category. So I got put in with guys who had done some time for whatever, and it wasn't exactly like very homey. So I didn't go in. Everybody's like, hey, welcome, and let's sit down and talk. It was, you mind your own business, and you stay in your room, you stay on your
path. You went back to prison. You went from a more therapeutic environment back to a more mainline GP environment. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah, for a lot of guys, it was just a ticket out, because as well as anybody, you need an address. And so if you get an address and someplace vouches for you, and parole board says you can go home, you're going home to your new home.
Right.
But so it can be all sorts, or you can be like the place that we're going to go visit this week. And it's a very nice situation, and it's a therapeutic environment, and you've got people who want to be there and are trying to make some healthy changes. That's can be very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be, and there's that milieu and there's that environment. Before we talk about the environment or the other people, let's talk about, real quick, the helpful. If you're moving to that area, so a lot of times people are getting a fresh start when they come out of treatment or jail or some institution, we'll just say treatment for the purposes of the show, right? And, mm-hmm. and now they're living in a new town. And that's where the sober living environment, sober living house can really be helpful in providing kind of the assistance with, rental properties, who's leasing, like you said, the jobs, healthcare, connecting with healthcare services, mental health care services, medication management in a new place. A lot of people, there's a lot of co-occurring disorders out there, and a lot of these people are on some form of psych meds, it's just the way it is. And so those meds need to be followed through. Hopefully, if they're on psych meds, they get followed through by a psychiatrist. That's not always the case, depending on the location, right?
Right.
A nurse practitioner or some sort of a family doctor that will help, manage those meds. But, So being in the new, in a new geographic area, it's a plus to have a transitional piece to that.
Oh, yeah. When I got out, I went to my brother's because for anyone who doesn't know, I had run out of options. I did not have a place to go. So my brother, being the kind of guy he is, he and his wife offered their guest room for me to move into and figure out what I was going to do. But shortly after, you know, they still live in the area where I was gotten all my trouble. And so a couple weeks after I'd come home, I ran into some people and I was just put in an awkward position. And so we discussed that and decided that it was better that I go somewhere else. So again, this is right after I got out. And so that's when I picked a halfway house in West Texas. And there were a couple of reasons that was important. I needed to know some people in the program who were going to meetings, who were sober, and halfway house is the best place to find newcomers or people who are in the same situation as me. Secondly, financially, I didn't have a down payment for an apartment. Not only that, but I'm a convicted felon. So even if I do have some money, I might need more than regular people because they might require more money from me because of my history. And that was the best way for me to get out there. And so it was huge for me because I didn't know anybody out there except for I had a job lead. But other than that, you know, so how was I going to, because I needed to leave here. It wasn't smart to stay here. I needed to try something different. Right. And so without that halfway house, I'm not sure how I would have gotten out there or how I would have. That was huge for me. It was I needed $100. Oh, not only that, the lady who owns the house has told me the first week's free. So I got to go like that. Wow. And I just had 2 weeks to scrape up $100.
Wow, man. Right there. It just shows you how important, how clutch that came through, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That you could go there. So I think that, you know, but that's good. So now the most to me now, so those are all the kind of the structural reasons why a sober living house is good. All the resources, making the transition, ways to maintain your sobriety. But probably one of the most key elements, man, if not the most key element, is who is with you in the sober living environment. Who are you around? In, you know, what is the therapeutic milieu? What are these people like? Okay. And that usually comes in two flavors, sometimes three: good people, not so good people, and then the okay people. But you know, if you want to go ahead and talk about some of the characters you might have encountered or riffraff, whatever, that you had to stay strong in your own mind and work your program and not get caught up in any BS or whatever.
Yeah. In the particular house where I landed, there were some folks who just weren't happy. And I talk about this with anybody I sponsor, any client I work with. This sobriety recovery is not to just be sober and dull. It is to experience life on a new level and to be grateful and to find happiness. And I was excited about my new life. I was excited about my new opportunity. And so when I got stuck with just this negativity, you know, sometimes you can reach out and try to help people. But thankfully, I was able to build some relationships in my home group, the groups that I was going to. And so I was able to, I was staying busy, staying at work, going to meetings. And so I was able to kind of work through that and eventually move out to a healthier environment. But I know some guys who I sponsor and they have just the coolest group of guys that they've met and built relationships with, this brotherhood and sober living facilities. And it's just awesome to see when they have that. That's the coolest thing ever. But I have also got phone calls from sponsees, one in particular who called me while I was at work one day to tell me that the FBI had raided their sober living home because of the guy running the house had a federal warrant. I mean, and then I had another friend of mine who was telling me about his roommate kept buying Jordans and all these clothes and found out he was selling crack. And I mean, that was a state funded. That was after Safe Pete. They had both been paroled into that house, and his buddy decided he was going to start slinging crack 3 weeks out of prison. So, you never know, but I say you never know, but you can pick, you can research these places before you go.
Theoretically.
Right.
And you go,
except for the crack salesman situation. Well, he didn't get to pick that.
Because you don't know who's in there. You can have the nicest house and the crappiest person in an house. You know what I mean? So
yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So it's like a box of chocolates. You don't really know until you get there. And one of my things that I've been doing on Facebook is I've been friending every sober living house I find. Everyone, Joe and Bob Sober Living. I think there's a place like that in Austin. No, seriously, I think it's the name of it.
I believe you.
Any sober living house on Facebook, I've been friending, and that way I can go to their page and see what's going on, see what it looks like, you know, it's fun to see the variance of difference. So that'll be one of our cons, I guess. We'll go, that just there's a large variance. A sober living house isn't a sober living house. It's not a sober living house. So just like Neil is saying, and I'm saying, do your diligence, right? And really try to research as much as you can. A lot of the time these people just go on authority of the treatment center. Well, this is who we use in Fort Worth, and that's fine too, man. I mean, but again, that changes. So some of these places are just as good as the staff running them. Like in the federal prison system, I know I can't resist, but some of the take a place like Texarkana, Texas. Okay. Their dad worked there. Their daddy's dad worked there. I mean, that place is such a legacy prison for the staff, Ashland, Kentucky, some of these places, man, that's the spot. That's the place to work, And so you really have, in this case, it's a good thing that you just have people that are working at a place that this is their Super Bowl, and they cling to that. So versus places where the turnover is high, a lot of corruption. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of other stuff. So do your diligence and certainly research as best you can the sober living environment that you're going to. I guess one of the things I wanted to talk about in my experience seeing scores of these places, like they talk about in family therapy, if you go through family therapy, each sibling has a role. There's the hero child, the mascot who's always cracking jokes, the lost child who's invisible, the rebel child. Yeah, so you have all these kind of characters in family therapy. Well, such is the same in sober living.
Oh yeah.
Right. We have the know-it-all, the guy who just tells everybody how to work their steps and what to do. We have the dude that just sits there, who's the lump on the couch and eats all day or whatever. Just the guy's sober. But that's about it. He's not doing anything else. He's watching TV and he's eating.
Yeah.
And he'll talk to you like, "How are you?" "Great." Netflix, I'm on season 3, episode 57, Anyway, but so there's the know-it-all, the guy on the couch. Then there's the troublemaker, right? The troublemaker who's kind of going against staff or trying to, raise some cane. I guess then there's the goody two shoes person who's who's always there trying to be, their room is always the cleanest. They're always calling attention to themselves about how clean their room is and how perfect and what they're doing. So, But certainly, you know, you've got to be able to navigate around the various personalities that are living with you in the sober living environment, right? Because that in itself is almost like a form of family therapy. So,
yeah. One, I think it's important to remember that everyone's in some type of way, everyone's at the same place in their lives. Like, that, of course, it may be this guy's third time or this guy's first time, but essentially you're all transitioning into a hopefully healthier lifestyle, and nobody's got it figured out. And so it's important to remember that none of these guys have it all figured out. If they did, they wouldn't be there. That's what this is for. Right. This is for us to learning and grease the wheels, and kind of, it's your training wheels. It's what it is, you know?
Right. You're exactly right. So there is, because if you're going to do groups and you're going to do a house group, many of these homes, you know, do a house group.
The fireworks, man, that's where it happens.
Yeah. But having that unity purpose in terms of achieving and or maintaining sobriety and moving forward and being helpful to one another, being kind to one another, and man, boy, you know, get ready. Because, you know, I know you're not going to tolerate any BS, and I'm not going to be tolerating any BS in our project. You know what I mean? In terms of anybody who's trying to be subversive or overly negative or whatever. And
well, you just don't have time for it, man. There's important stuff that's got to be the central focus. You don't have time for that stuff.
You know, you don't, I don't, and the other people around us that are trying to find recovery and maintain it, they don't have time for it either. Another
whether
draw,
they know it or not. They're
gonna know, man. They're gonna know. There's gonna be layers, man. There's gonna be some real solid layers, man. And I'm gonna, anyway, we'll see how that all develops. But so let's go on with another one of the cons. No insurance. You know, a lot of these sober living environments are private pay. Okay, they are private pay, and so with that, you kind of get what you pay for. I mean, with the higher the monthly fee, probably the more amenities. I hate to use that word, but or the better environment.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it's, man, I mean, it's, I'm telling you, man, like the refrigerator is an important place in a sober living environment. So if you're playing less than $1,000 a month, it's like, hey, we're all going to go to Sam's and we're going to, you know, or the house man's going to go to Sam's and buy groceries for the sober living house for the week. Man, you better get it in as soon as the guy gets back from the store, because everything's going to be gone. Now, if it's another place that has more resources, there might be more groceries anyway. But
there's people have got their cupboards, their own little refrigerators, and they lock them. I've heard about some heated discussions, and more than just discussions, it's turned into more than words over groceries and things of that nature. Yeah, so yeah, you're certainly, I didn't have the luxury of choosing an upper echelon environment. I had to find what I could get, and I got what I paid for, buddy. This was a house built in probably the 1940s and it was just up to code. And so, but hey, running water, the refrigerator worked, and that's really all that mattered, I guess, to an extent. At least that's where I was at, but you're right about that.
That place, did you have mandatory house meeting on Sunday? Did you have mandatory 12-step?
No, this one, I'm thinking back to the guys in that house. They cracked me up. Like, I could not see any of them sitting down for a meeting together. There were some things that you had to do. You had to attend two meetings a week, NA or AA, or Celebrate Recovery, something recovery related, and you had to work. and there was a chore, there were house chores, and then payment, you know. And so there were a couple things that were required each week. You know, if you're working, you need to be working this many hours. If you're not working, there was something else. You had to go to more meetings if you didn't have a job. So you got chores, meetings, employment, payment. I think that's everything.
Okay. So, so yeah, again, just speaks to the large variance of programming, not programming. Certainly you want people to be occupied. You want your population to be busy. You do want folks to be busy either programming with on-site programming or going to meetings and or going to work and or going to practice their religion or spiritual program.
And, sponsor. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Please.
A lot of times it's mandatory that you have a sponsor and you're working the same
sponsor. You know, that's the thing. I like what COVID-19 has done to us is that you can do sponsee. You can go to meetings online now. You can have a sponsor online now. Yeah. You know, let's say, you know, somebody sought out you or Sherrod as their, you know, sponsor while they're in the house. They want to continue with that for a while. You can do that, you know, through telephonically. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing we didn't have back in the day. You know, you're just kind of like, yeah, you got to find a temporary sponsor in 48 hours and you just roll up to some dude in a meeting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're going to get, you know? And
yeah.
And sometimes sponsors are just too busy for sponsees. They're on a list, but then at the end of the day, they're really not spending time with people. And the people that are fresh into a sober living environment really need that connection, you know?
I'd equate that. That's the same as, you know, when you have an insurance that's PPO, it feels, when you get a list of doctors and you're told you can go these, and you don't necessarily get treated like the doctor you would like to pick. It's very similar when you go to a facility and they say, you can choose from this list of sponsors. It's like, dang, I don't even know the guy. I don't get to pick. So yeah, that part kind of frustrates me to tell someone who they can be sponsored by.
Do the best thing anyway. With our project, there will be some latitude of, you know, if they want to go that direction of who for their coaching, for their individualized sober coaching.
You certainly need to vet them if you let them choose, but
right,
you know, there has to be some type of, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I guess there are some people that go in these sober living environments and they stay, and I've seen this, they stay too long. You know what I mean? And they get a little bit complacent or a little bit lazy. And it's scary, man. It's scary to come out of a place that you feel safety and you have your basic needs met. The bills are paid. The food is there. The TV works. You have fellowship with other guys. You can go out, maybe get a job. You can go to the grocery store. You can use tobacco products. I mean, you know what I mean? What's not to love about this place? Just kidding. But yeah. But yet they stay too long. And what happens is that can interfere with the person becoming independent.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
My roommate was 65 and had been there for a year and a half. Scared me to death. So I meet the guy and he's a nice guy. Right. A couple days in, we're talking and I'm like, so, you know, what's your plan? What does it look like for you? You know, where are you going? Where's your life headed? And he was like, I mean, I work down the road.
This is my life. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And I was kind of like, I was a little worried. And I said, well, how long have you been here? He said, a year and a half. I was like, why? And I asked him, I said, why? He said, oh, I'm just not ready. Listen, sir, you've been ready. You know, you need to get ready if you're not.
Right.
And that freaked me out. And actually, I'm thankful for that because I was out in the next 3 weeks after that conversation. I made a decision. I'm not going to be that guy. Not right. ever. Right. Not ever. And so I remember calling my dad and I said, Dad, I said, I'm going to have to expedite this process. I said, I need some direction because I'm not doing this. But yeah, I think, and honestly, think about, so there's homeless guys who want three hots and a cot. They'll go commit a petty crime to get thrown into county jail. Much is the same when you've got folks who are living on the street and are drug addicts for several years, and they wind up in a spot like that, that's a huge step up. So you're just going to run into people who are okay with that, and that's enough for them.
Or they're in that station of life, three hots and a cot, out of jail, whatever, homeless, et cetera, and still sabotage it.
Yeah.
I mean, on fire, come in, rip roaring, drunk or high as a kite or whatever, and be like, man, dude. And then, hey, man, you got to go. And, you know, I think, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, talking about a place that we know and love. Anyway, so the yeah. house, the director of the program, like, that's it. You got, man, these guys go, you know. And as a matter of fact, I got to see firsthand a situation where guy came out of prison, was the troublemaker. Another guy comes in, he's struggling, he's new, the troublemaker and the new guy relapses by coming in drunk. The troublemaker makes enough trouble on his own. They both get thrown out. The troublemaker steals the drunk dude's car before they got to Amarillo. You know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah.
Are you, I mean, bro, I wouldn't believe it unless I literally saw it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my word. So I know our project has, I think, a environmental step to that.
Yeah, we got a gate.
Thing for more than 3 months. We'll find out that if it's Bill Gates or something like that, then just kidding, Bill.
Oh gosh.
Then obviously they might, at some point you get deputized as a part-time staff member or monitor or something. I'm not sure about doing the whole year thing, but that's that. Okay. And another point of ours is that, so we talk about a good thing, right? It can be a good thing that you're around people in a sober living environment. Everybody's a one mission, one purpose, staying sober, you know, esprit de corps. But also by the same token, you're surrounded by people that are, you know, many times.
Sick. New.
I was going to say new in their recovery.
No, not me. I get to say this because I am one. I'm sick. I'm not being rude, but I'm not mincing words.
Right.
It's a house full of sick folks, man.
Right.
It's just the way it is. But listen, some of the most amazing human beings were once extremely sick.
Right.
And unfortunately, everyone's not at the same place on their journey. And you're going to run into some folks who are not ready to change, or they're saying they've changed and they have not. But all the more reason, this is the classic line that you'll hear forever in a day. Work your own program, because people are always look, well, this guy's doing that. So what, you know, your sobriety and your recovery is yours and yours only. And
that's right.
So you've got, it's real important to remember that going into these things. And also if you're working with someone who's in an environment and struggling, that we need to remind them of that over and over again, that this is, doesn't matter what happens with anybody around you, because they're not going to save you. They can't save you. And the only person who can is you. And if you believe in a higher power, but it's got to be here.
And man, that's going to be the challenge for everybody. And that's going to be the challenge for you and I and Sherrod moving forward. Cause there's going to be this kind of milieu group life. And then there's going to be the person's individual recovery. mediated by a recovery coach, right? Yeah. They will have a recovery coach assigned to them, and that's their program, that's their recovery while they're in this particular sober living environment. And so, I look forward to that, and that's going to be, yeah. It's going to be some challenges ahead. You know what I mean? Just because, like you said, these folks are high spirited, lots of personality, lots of possible dysfunction in there. You know what I mean? To make things more challenging psychologically. But it is what it is, man. But I think, you know, we're going to be there, standing in the gap at all levels to assist people. So, I'm really excited about, you know, what that looks like moving forward. And each new person in the environment or the house really changes tone, you know. It's kind of like those MTV Cribs shows. The people in there are just like, oh my God. So, but we're gonna have our own way of mitigating some of those things and standing in the gap. So yeah, the sober living environment, pros and cons. Certainly the pros outweigh the cons, because literally, absolutely. I mean, people need a place to be able to go to after treatment to get integrated or reintegrated or what have you toward a more independent lifestyle, and to do that with some assistance. While, I mean, just the urges and the cravings, you know, everybody in prison can sit there in prison and say, yeah, man, I'm going to make it. I know I'm going to make it. But once they get out on the streets, and once you see what it's really like out there in society, you know, and it's a whole different deal. And it's hard. You just can't get your head around it sitting in a jail cell or even in a hospital until you're out there. And that's where the sober living environment, you have one foot in and one foot out. And that's what we're there for, to help. You know, grow into independence in the free world.
When these people are at a point where they're establishing a new set of morals and a new set of values, you want a healthy environment to help them, and your environment's going to have a very, very big impact on how you jump out the gate. It's exciting though. You know, we get to help them do that.
Absolutely. So looking forward to the challenge, and I, you know, a lot of folks listening to the show are already in the sober living space or recovery coaching space, sober coaching, sober companionship, everything that's out there. So they know what we're talking about is pretty much on point with one. So well, just 2 minutes left here as we wrap up the show. So, glad we were able to talk about sober living issues. You know, I think in a few weeks, we're going to talk about maybe a little twist of putting people in a sober living environment before they go to treatment, a place for them to weigh things out, receive coaching and help to help them make the best treatment decision moving forward. They got to get out of their house. They got to get out of their job for whatever reason immediately. But the sober living environment might be a place or that individual then makes a treatment decision and then goes forward into an IOP or a inpatient facility from a sober living house. So we'll talk about that. It's kind of a novel concept. We may talk about that in the weeks to come. Anyway, yeah. So Neil, how can folks reach you?
Folks can reach me by visiting the website at www.elevatedlifestyleacademy.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Elevated Lifestyle Academy, and on Instagram, Elevated_Lifestyle_Academy.
Right. And we're going to build a new Instagram account, aren't we, Neil?
Yes. Yep. In the works.
And anyway, so I know it's all good. We do have a Facebook So come by and see us, the Concierge Coaches. Stand by for the Instagram account. It'll be coming forward, and I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. So, folks, thanks for watching this, the Concierge Coach Show here on LA Talk Radio. Glad to be here, 2021. So grateful to be here, Neil and I are. And we'll see you here next week. See you here next week, same time, same channel. If not, catch us on iHeartRadio or Apple Podcasts. So take care. See everybody next week.
See you later.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron, only on LA Talk Radio.